Welcome to MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex, and with me, as usual, is James. You can check out our website to see our previous episodes. We most recently talked about Pop Star Never Stop Never Stopping. We talked about The Professional before that, The Nice Guys, The Verdict, and I'm Not There previously. You can also follow us on Twitter, at The MacGuffin Man, and that's about it.
Welcome to The MacGuffin Man. And now, here are Alex and James.
James.
Yeah.
Here we are.
I know. I'm not there. I'm more like Steph Curry at the victory party.
Whoa. Burn City.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're talking about basketball today, the NBA Finals. I don't know, culmination of my lifelong obsession with basketball, I guess.
Well, yeah, we've done the finals a few years, and there's the finals and kind of the NBA season in general that will provide some good stuff to talk about this year round.
Yeah, exactly. It was a phenomenally interesting NBA season in a bunch of weird different ways. And the fact that the finals ended up being as interesting as they were was very surprising to me, but only in a wonderful way, you know?
I mean, wasn't the surprising abundance of blowouts a little disappointing, only to be undone by the lovely Game 7?
Yeah, but like the only games I felt I didn't care about Game 2 at all. Like, that was barely worth watching. But that one kind of gets a pass because I was in a different city with a friend who I don't see very frequently. So like I didn't really care that much about the game anyway, so it was fine. Game 3 and Game 6, which were the Cavs home blowouts, those are still fine, especially Game 6 where the Warriors made a couple really good runs. Because against the Warriors, like, you never really feel like a 30-point lead or a 24-point lead in Game 6's case is all that safe.
Right.
So, like, there is always some element of suspense even when they're down 30, you know, which is crazy to say. But as seen in Game 6, I think they got within 4 in Game 6, you know?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Just a lead of that size can be made interesting. So
yeah, absolutely.
So do you want to start with the finals or do you want to start with some regular season?
I don't know. Let's do regular season first.
Okay.
Because I feel like everybody's talking about the finals first because the finals was awesome. Game 7 was awesome. It was the best. I couldn't fall asleep because I was so excited by what I had seen. But yeah, the regular season was really interesting because, and I'm sure I told you this at some point throughout the season, but for the listener, I watch a lot of basketball regular season, and in the playoffs I really step up my game and watch even more. But this regular season, I like was really following the Warriors for a long time until it, and just in general was watching less of other teams just because it kind of seemed like pointless to watch teams that weren't the Warriors because the Warriors were so good that they made everybody else seem obsolete. And so I ended up kind of eventually watching less basketball than I normally do in the regular season, just because of how good the Warriors were. And that was really interesting to me, and it was so the idea that a team could be so good at basketball in what I think is an unbelievable era of basketball talent wise. I think the league is doing so well right now from a talent standpoint that I still couldn't really be all that bothered to watch as much basketball as usual is pretty crazy to me, which is to say that I was watching like 4 games a week instead of probably 6, you know?
Right. So why is it that a blowout game can be so boring sometimes, but is it just the Warrior style of play? Watching them win by a lot was still interesting just because how they did it, and does the eventual option of them breaking the regular season record become part of it just to see them win no matter how they do it?
For the record thing, that was cool, but could be followed at a distance. The only game in the record, as they were getting down to the nitty gritty, the only one I definitely made sure I was going to watch was the 73rd win.
Right.
So like, but the record was definitely cool. I never thought 72-10 would be broken. But that was cool, but could be watched at a distance. The watching them in blowouts was still interesting because they play such an interesting style of basketball. So here's the history of the league from 1980 onward in very brief.
Okay.
So, so 1980 is when you see Magic Johnson and Larry Bird sort of join the league. And I mean, I wasn't even born yet, but the general consensus from all the people I trust that know and love basketball is that that's where the modern era of basketball begins, where you sort of start to get a step up in athleticism. And just in general, like, there was a real injection of talent in the league, and a lot of that talent ended up on the Lakers or the Celtics. And so through all the 80s, those guys run the NBA, and they both play a very sort of team style of basketball. Magic Johnson's notorious for this, and Larry Bird slightly less so, but they were still both great passers. And just in general, were great leaders that didn't necessarily have to score 40 every game for their team to win. And then you get Michael Jordan. He gets drafted in 86, I think. And he really started to establish the alpha dog mentality of the league that was really strong and really prevalent for a long time. And of course, bridging those two, you've got the Detroit Pistons that are kind of an outlier, that are a super fascinating team, but we won't get into it. But Michael Jordan really became like, this is a guy that not only is he going to have his own shoe, he's going to have his own line, like his own brand of Nike, like a spin-off brand, you know? And he was so famous, so unbelievably famous and popular that pretty much every shooting guard and small forward for the 10 years from like 2000 or 1995 to like 2005 seemed to actively be trying to be Michael Jordan, you know? And that sort of starts to change in 2003 when we get another great injection of talent in the league. Because I should point out, I generally think the era, the 90s, was not the finest era for talent in basketball. And that's not taking anything away from Michael Jordan. He still won 6 championships, but I think he did it against a league that wasn't as strong as the league that is today. That's not to say Michael Jordan wouldn't have won 6 championships now, but I just don't think the talent level was as high. So you get to 2003, and the years between Jordan retiring from the Bulls in 98 to 2003 are very like not great years of basketball, because everybody wants to be like Jordan. Everybody wants to shoot 40 times a game, and it doesn't matter if they shoot 35%, you know, it's just this very lone wolf mentality that exists in the league. Like, you've got people like Paul Pierce, Allen Iverson, Vince Carter that are the stars of the league, and they're shooting so many times. And then you get to 2003, where we get LeBron, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh all in the same draft. And they're also talented and revitalize 4 different teams, 4 individual teams by themselves, and just bring this new level of talent in the league. And especially in LeBron's case, he's such a talented passer that he sort of made team ball more popular. And a couple years after that, you get the Steve Nash Phoenix Suns, where Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni, who was the coach, basically created the most influential NBA offense in the post-2000 era, because it was all about motion. It was all about players moving all as much as possible, ball movement, and shooting quickly, you know, getting good shots. And they cared about the three, which wasn't something that was a really popular thought at the time. And Nash wins 2 MVPs, you know? And that sort of care, that idea didn't win. Did I say he won 3 MVPs? He won 2 MVPs. Anyways, and that carried through to when we get to the Heat, the decision in 2010, and they get beat by Dallas in the finals, which is another lone wolf team that is also really interesting to me, but I won't talk about them. Because they were still playing this, they were playing this type of hero ball. They hadn't figured out how to play a team game. And the next year, when they did win their first title against the Thunder, they had figured out a team game. And then the following year, they barely won their second title against the Spurs. And then the Spurs eventually beat them by like cranking up everything about that motion offense to 11. And then the Warriors turned that up to 12, you know? And so it's that's a long, convoluted way of saying that the game has gotten way more interesting from a X's and O's perspective, because now, as opposed to a lot of ISO ball that you would get in the 90s, which is to say, pass the ball to Michael Jordan and everybody clear out, which is entertaining in its own right. But now the Warriors were thriving off of pass the ball to Steph Curry and then watch him pass it to Klay Thompson and then watch him pass it to Andre Iguodala and then watch him pass it to Draymond Green and then watch him pass it back to Steph Curry, who drills a three, you know, and they're running off screens all the time. So it's just a more aesthetically pleasing style of basketball to me. And that was what was interesting about watching the Warriors in a blowout, win in a blowout, you know?
Yeah. I love the term hero ball. Just reading about it lately. I've seen it a lot.
Well, I mean, last night you got one of the greatest examples in the history of the game of hero ball with Kyrie Irving's three-pointer. But
right.
Yeah.
We'll get to the finals a bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
Well.
And I know I just dropped a lot of things. I tried to do it as quickly as possible in a way that also made sense. But I think it's kind of interesting to know. Like, you kind of have to know the history of the game to understand why what the Warriors are doing is so cool, you know?
Yeah, no, I get that. It's interesting to think about kind of the delay. I mean, the young children, or, you know, not young, but anywhere between the ages of 7 and 16, people who are still getting into basketball, still learning basketball, people who will go on to be NBA players, watching an athlete like Michael Jordan and that doing so much to inform the way that they play. And mm-hmm. then we kind of have that bit of a lag where, you know, those players go to high school, go to college, and then, and maybe not even go to college, but make it into the league. And there's kind of that, you know, that delayed reaction where as those things change in the NBA, then those people who are young kind of, get influenced by those players, then we see a big shift. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think it's crazy to think that we're going to see a lot of, or that there are a lot of Steph Curry wannabes who in a few years will be making the NBA and playing in a way that wouldn't be the way kids their age thought of what it is to be a NBA superstar that many years ago, you know?
Yeah. No, I know. It's. I mean, a lot of people have theorized about this recently, about what the Warriors' success is going to mean to the future of basketball, like how it's going to influence people, the way that Michael Jordan influenced, like, Vince Carter, you know?
Yeah. What do you think?
I don't know. Because I think, like, Klay Thompson is not somebody that the league hasn't seen before, right? I think Zach Lowe wrote a whole piece about Klay Thompson recently after Game 6 of the Thunder series when he was amazing, but about whether or not Klay Thompson could carry his own team. And his idea was that if Klay Thompson was the lone star of his own team, he would be like Ray Allen, you know, like maybe not good enough to win the championship on his own, but still very, very good. And I thought that was a good comparison point. And Steph Curry, like, I still don't even understand how to explain some of the shots that he's able to make, you know, because whereas Klay Thompson just has perfect form, it's like he was born in a jump shooting lad. Steph Curry's it doesn't make sense to me that other people could learn how to shoot like Steph Curry does, just because I don't think Steph Curry ever learned how to shoot like he does. He just does it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and there's nothing logical in the idea that he is just innately a great shooter, because I definitely think that's a skill. But I also think there's an element of talent to it, like natural talent that Steph Curry just has that I just don't think other people can have. You know?
Yeah. Oh, the circus shots and things like that.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. All the, like, a lot of the things that make Steph Curry great, you know? And it's interesting that they're on the same team just because Curry and Thompson, because I think that there will be a lot more Klay Thompsons, but I'm not sold on the idea of there being even one more Steph Curry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. Mm-hmm. It's just, I mean, the idea of team ball being something that people want to emulate more, just, it seems so positive, and you know what
it's
I mean?
It's awesome. I love it because I love team basketball, you know? And I think the somebody that we should definitely mentioned for that is also Draymond Green, right? Because a big part of the Warriors' success also comes from the fact that they sort of figured out that if you can field a team that is pretty much five guys that are about 6'8" and can defend any position, you can be an unbelievably good defensive team. And that's what they do. Like, that's their quote unquote death lineup. It's when they take their center out and put in Iguodala, and then you've got Iguodala and Draymond Green, both absolutely fantastic defenders, and Klay Thompson, another fantastic defender, and Harrison Barnes, who is a good defender, and Steph Curry, who is also a good defender. But what you can do is say, when you get LeBron and Kyrie Irving doing a pick and roll, and say Steph Curry is on Kyrie Irving and Draymond Green is on LeBron. This is a terrible example, but I'll go through it anyway. So LeBron sets a pick for Kyrie, and then Draymond Green would switch on to Kyrie, right? And since Draymond Green can guard Kyrie by himself as the center, like, that is a huge thing. When your center could also guard point guards, that really helps you out defensively. Obviously, that example is flawed because then they would just pass it to LeBron, who would then post up Curry, which we saw a lot in the finals, the last three games specifically. But the idea that your center is a good enough defender to guard the smallest, quickest player on the other team really unlocks a lot of things for your defense.
Yeah. Just watching... you know, watching these games, and obviously Steph Curry being the face of the Warriors team, even though, you know, Klay Thompson and obviously just a lot of talented people, as we discussed, having a team ball. Mm-hmm. Watching him kind of paired off against LeBron James, not necessarily on the court, but just as, you know, the faces of the two franchise. How different are they as players? I mean, are they opposite ends of the spectrum and personality-wise in the way that they're kind of viewed in the public eye? Is it... You know, when we compare them to something like, you know, Larry Bird and Magic, what does this rivalry look like? And can we call it that? Or is it just happen to be the two players that made it with the two best teams?
I think it's unquestionably a rivalry. I think the a lot of people seem to think that it can't be a rivalry until both teams win. I don't really hold that viewpoint. It still could have been a rivalry if the Cavs lost last night. Like, the Clippers and the Warriors are a rivalry, even though the Clippers cannot beat the Warriors under any circumstances, it seems. But it is interesting because, you know, LeBron was on the cover of Sports Illustrated at like 17, I think, maybe, with the title of the article being The Chosen One, you know, and that is not the place that Steph Curry came from, because, you know, obviously Steph Curry grew up in a very different way than LeBron. LeBron didn't have an easy upbringing. Steph Curry grew up as a rich kid. His dad, Del Curry, was a journeyman through the NBA, played on the Raptors for a few years. Where LeBron went straight from high school to the NBA and was immediately really good, Steph Curry, he might have even done 4 years at Davidson. And then came into the league, and it was sort of like this slow build to get to where the Warriors were started to get last year, you know, where he was the MVP of the league. And part of that was that Steph Curry had a lot of injury problems. Everybody knew the night he was drafted at like 9 or something that was too low for him. But even those people didn't anticipate him becoming the MVP of the league. They just expected him to be a very good starting point guard. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about just...
Whereas LeBron was expected to have 3 championships by this point in his career. You know?
Not 2, not 3. yeah, and I mean, the decision factors into that too. I mean, making such a big spectacle of things before it really seemed deserved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the decision is... I was a big LeBron fan just because I admire greatness if it doesn't give me any reason to hate them, a la Kobe Bryant. But the decision really flipped me. Like, I was rooting for LeBron, I think, pretty much every year other than when he would match up against the Celtics, you know, just because I really liked that Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, KG team. And that absolutely flipped with the decision. I mean, just because I really got caught up in the media uproar about it, I was just like, this is untoward, you know? And I definitely was actively rooting against the Heat for a while. Yeah.
And so where does this put LeBron in the narrative? Does it change anything that he's won this one? Does it change a lot, or does it?
Oh, it changes so much.
Does it bigger? Is it a much bigger change than him just coming back to Cleveland as far as the way he's viewed?
Absolutely. Because now not only did he come back to Cleveland while saying, I want to win a championship for the city, he came back to Cleveland and actually did it, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, game 5 and 6 are just his play in those games is just two of the most unbelievable performances I've ever seen any player do. Like, game 5, he was out of control, and game 6, he I was just watching that game, and you know, it wasn't even on the stat sheet initially. I was just watching his passes, and they were all so crisp and perfect, and he was finding people that you couldn't even imagine somebody making that pass, which is the type of thing that LeBron does every once in a while, but he was doing it in like consecutive possessions, you know. And it really was an amazing performance. And there was something that Charles Barkley said this years ago in an interview, that when he watches an NBA game, he just watches the best player the whole time. Like, he keeps his eyes on them. And I rewatched game 6, game 5 and game 6, just watching LeBron exclusively the whole time.
Bath salts of LeBron.
Yeah, exactly. Bath salts LeBron. And it was just, it was amazing. Like, he was almost always doing the exact right thing. And I mean, his performance in game 7 was slightly worse, but slightly worse than basically perfect is pretty great. And that block at the end of game 7, I can't imagine there'd be, like, I mean, it's definitely a recency bias thing, but it has to be my favorite defensive play of all time. Like, I just can't even think of another comparable thing just because of the stakes, right?
Yeah, and it's tough for a defensive play to be the iconic play unless it was blocking the buzzer beater that would have ended up losing that team the game. But yeah. Is there a play from last night or even that series that kind of rivals it as a isolated iconic play for the future?
Kyrie's 3.
Right. Yeah.
Cause that is still that's the one that, that's the one that will be seen over and over again, but it will always be tied to that block. Because that shot, Kyrie's shot, is what won them the game, you know. Is the, if the Cavs hadn't scored another point, and I mean, they only scored one more point, but, if LeBron hadn't scored that one of those free throws, that, you know, those are the game-winning points. They still would have won. So that's the one, but the block matters absolutely, because it was madness when it happened. You could see it on the bench that, like, the Cavs were like, what the hell was that? I was watching this game with, I think, probably 5 people that don't really care about basketball at all, and I think at least 3 of them made audible reactions. Like, it was unbelievable. And I've definitely watched that block 100 times. You know, like, it just, I watched a Vine on repeat for way too long last night. But yeah, I don't remember what the original question was. I just wanted to talk about LeBlanc.
LeBlanc. No, just kind of the iconic takeaway plays from it. But yeah, I mean, Kyrie did more than make that 3-ball too, right?
Oh, Kyrie. Kyrie was great all game. And he had at least 3... like, just shockingly difficult and ones that he converted. And like the couple of the ones that did the high kiss off the glass, and it was great. It was really cool. And I never had doubts that Kyrie Irving would be good on that type of stage. Like, he's kind of the type of player that annoys me, but he's also the type of player that makes you really confident that he's not afraid of anything. And it was really cool to see him come through and play so well. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So speaking of players that annoy you, did you want to talk about Kobe at all yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should, because it is kind of a nice, the end of his career is kind of a nice dovetail with, the Warriors' success, right? Because his last game was played on the same night as the Warriors' 73rd win. It was the last night of the regular season, right? So they're at home, the Lakers are at home against Utah, as the Warriors are at home against Memphis, I think. And, you know, I'm watching both games concurrently, and the Warriors were kind enough to start the blowout early enough that I didn't really have to pay that much attention to that game. But like all season, the Kobe Bryant retirement tour was, I mean, like one stop short of embarrassing, like just the way that he would go to these other towns and get feted and all that stuff. And then would just a lot of times play like garbage because he post his Achilles injury in 2012 or 13, he just really hasn't been very good. And so it was just kind of like, yeah, okay, just go away. Just go quietly into the night, you know?
You mean keep shooting?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what he did do. And he was shooting unbelievably terrible percentages for the first half of the season, for sure. And then he started to get better in the second half. But that last game against Utah, which I ended up watching pretty much all of the second half because the Warriors game got uninteresting so quickly. It was really amazing. And he scored 60 points, you know, and the vast majority in the second half. And I think a lot, like most of them, even in the fourth quarter alone. And it was really fascinating to watch because the refs decided that they were just not going to call moving screens and that they were going to let Kobe's teammates just like basically throw Utah players out of the way, you know, like it's hilarious watching that game and thinking about all the missed calls. But it was just so cool to watch in the moment, to watch Kobe. It felt like the last dying breath of hero ball to watch that game, you know, because Kobe Bryant built his career on wanting to be Michael Jordan. I swear he, for a long time as a youth, tried to make himself sound like Michael Jordan when he talks, and he got pretty close, you know. And his game was modeled after him, a lot of mid-range jumpers and drives to the hoop, dunks, same sort of post-up fadeaways. And it felt like that type of basketball was finally going away with Kobe Bryant. And it was really interesting that that happened to dovetail with the absolute highest moment of the Warriors' success as a team, you know?
Yeah, just a bit of a passing the torch moment.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And the other thing that was really interesting about Kobe's last game is the way that it seemed like everybody that wrote a piece on that game wrote the exact same piece. It's just like, We've all been annoyed by Kobe. All of these screens were illegal. This is a dead form of basketball. But man, wasn't it great to watch one more time, you know? And I thought that was really interesting because almost never in this world of hot takes do all the reporters sing in unison, you know?
Yeah, is that similar to why you came around to Kobe the way you did later in his career?
No, I think the reason I came around to Kobe more as a person than a player, because I stopped watching him pretty much post Achilles for the most part, just because his teams were never good again. When he tore his Achilles, I think it was in April of that year, they were pushing for the last playoff spot, and after that, it was pointless for me to watch because they were never in a playoff race again. But like he really settled into being old man Kobe and just being an asshole to people, which is the type of person he always was. But he tried to cover it up so much but it was so transparent that I knew he was still being an asshole to people. He was just trying to make sure I didn't see it. And he would just start being a dick to reporters and stuff. And I don't know, it came, like in a weird way, him being mean to people made me respect him more, you know.
The honesty of it.
Exactly. Like, you know, it's like, it's weird to respect somebody more for being honest, but at least he's being honest, you know?
Yeah.
So.
How do you feel about the reunion tours in general? I mean, I feel like we're just going to get more of them.
Oh, I hate them. I feel like we're on the same page with that.
Well, yeah. What is it about them?
It's just, especially when, like, you want more celebrations, and you're only getting these celebrations because your team is just garbage, you know? I don't know. It just seems like I'm all for all these glowing tributes and everything that don't involve the game. Like, write whatever piece you want to write. Steph Curry, sign and give your shoes to Kobe, or try and get his shoes, whatever. I don't care. It's just, I don't know. There's something about it that just seems so wrong to me. And just because it's not fun to watch. It's fun to watch in the last game. It's not fun to watch at any point before that. Yeah.
Time in a different stadium, but not the last time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like nobody, and maybe like Kobe, like he gets a pass for when they were in Philly. But like it's Kobe's last game in Washington. I'm going to sit down in front of the television and make sure to really soak in that celebration that they give him for no reason, you know? It's, I don't know. It's just, it's not basketball to me, you know.
Is it something about the NBA being a bit more conscious of their brand and doing more to form legacies? I mean, legacies are always going to be forming after the fact all the time, but is it easier to kind of shape it in the moment to keep things going to, you know, cement a narrative? Is that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, it ends up giving them more shots at getting that iconic shot for all the promos I see during the playoffs, you know? So I certainly understand why the NBA is fine with it. I definitely understand why the player is fine with it. And it also gives those teams, like the aforementioned Washington example, gives them a reason to sell more tickets, maybe a reason to sell tickets at a higher price. And yeah, I see it from every perspective. I just don't like it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's, I'm certainly not trying to change your mind about it, but I think it's just something I see in every league, and I just don't. It seems like it's always going to be happening more and more. It doesn't seem like something that's ever going to get rolled back. I know you can't do it every game, and you can't really force it for a player that wasn't as important as Kobe. But it just seems like something that, you know, just to protect and fuel the brand, is something that's just going to happen, not just in the NBA, but all major leagues.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So get used to it. It's fun.
I will sit on my rocking chair and keep yelling at people to get off my lawn. How about that?
Okay. That sounds good. Yeah. So what's it mean for the Warriors to break the regular season record, then lose the finals?
It's 2007 Pats thing, I feel like. Like, because any time that record gets brought up, the person that brings it up will also mention, yeah, but they didn't win the championship, right? Like, there was a picture going around of Scottie Pippen in practice wearing a t-shirt saying 72-10 doesn't mean a thing if you don't get the ring. And it's a picture from that season. Like, it's a practice that the Bulls were having in their playoff run that year in 96. And I do kind of believe that. And because it's such an accomplishment. It feels weird for it to be so diminished because they lost one game, you know? I mean, they lost four games, but specifically, had they won last night, we wouldn't even have this conversation. But I don't know. It's just, it really does feel like a thing that matters, you know? Anytime I talk about the Pats from 07, I always have to think about the helmet catch and the fact that they didn't win the Super Bowl. You know, it's just part of the conversation. And the fact that I think my favorite stat about it is that the Warriors had the same amount of losses in the regular season as they did in the playoffs, which is crazy. but you just have to mention it. It's shitty to call it an asterisk, but it is, because every time we see the stat about great regular seasons, there will be an asterisk because they are the ones that didn't win the title, you know, because there has to be that asterisk that at the bottom of the graphic that says that, you know?
Yeah. It's just, I think I fully agree with you. It's just, there's something that
feels weird. You know?
Yeah. But I mean, we talk about those years where the NBA wasn't that good, or, you know, there wasn't great competition, or the final series was, you know, not so entertaining. And, you know, someone has to win every year. Someone's going to win every year. But you didn't think 72 was going to get broken. When's 73 going to get broken? It seems
next year. What if they won 74 games next year
and then lost in the semifinals?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to guess or talk about what happens next year, or is that too tough?
No, I mean, we can talk about it. I think I'm really fascinated to see how the Warriors bounce back, because, I mean, I'm a firm believer in the idea that the Spurs won the title in 2014 because of how they lost in 2013. So the Warriors are the favorites to win the title, according to Vegas. And I do really think that they bounce back. And I thought that a version of what happened this year would happen next year, where
whatever team didn't win.
I'm sorry?
Team didn't win was going to win next year?
No. Just that the Warriors would eventually run out of steam and stop taking things as seriously. And because that happens, right? It's the Pat Riley called it the disease of me. But that's mostly about individuals. But it's just sort of this thing about prolonged winning, where you keep winning, you keep winning, you keep winning, and you just think you're the best, and then you stop. You only give 90% in your warm-ups. You know, you only do 90% of the things, and you keep winning for that, and then you only do 80%. And you just take everything slightly less seriously because you do believe you're so good. And this is a tried and true thing in the NBA. It happens all the time, even though there's no real stat for it, where a really good team just sort of believes that they can turn it on when they have to. And it will. It's always the downfall of all the great teams. It happened to the Lakers in the early 2000s as well. I thought that would happen with the Warriors next year, especially watching the Thunder. When they beat the Thunder this year, I was just like, oh, there's no way. Like, the Warriors will still win the title this year, but they won't win next year. Whereas now I think they might win next year, you know?
Right.
But it's all, I mean, it's also all injury dependent and stuff like that. But
yeah, well, it would have made sense for them to win the regular season, win the finals, and then definitely hit the hubris point then, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's really what it felt like. It just sort of, I don't know, it really felt like the Warriors were kind of just too, they just believed in themselves too much, which is weird. Right. Yeah.
It was nice to see Curry stay and congratulate the Cavs players, and
yeah, for sure. And
his interview seemed to be pretty, you know, they were offering him some outs, it seemed, and he kind of refused to take them. So that was, I mean, that's always good to see.
Yeah, I didn't see his interview, but I did see the congratulations and everything. I thought the one that really impressed me was the Draymond Green finding LeBron. I thought that was. That was cool, especially since Draymond is so annoying when he's playing basketball. Like, to see him off the court be not a dickhole was cool. But yes, I would agree. I also sort of think that the willingness to do those things might in some way have played into the fact that, you know, when their backs are up against the wall, they're still slightly too relaxed, you know? I don't know. That also sounds like a really old man thing, but just the fact that
that's not the MJ killer instinct.
Yeah, and also that seems hacky too, but it feels like something that matters, right? I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that? Because they really did. They kept playing loose right till the very end, and the best example of that is Curry's behind the back pass to Klay Thompson at a time when you just shouldn't throw a behind the back pass, and he messed it up and it went out of bounds. And it was a turnover.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I just think that was something that just never stopped with them. They were loose to the end. And in fairness to them, they won so much playing loose that maybe it would work at this point. But the thing that you really saw in game seven was that the game, especially the last 5 minutes, everybody was so tired and got so conservative because you want to do the sure thing, right? It all sort of broke down into one-on-one matchups. And that's sort of how the Warriors ended up losing game seven, was that since they didn't, in that situation, it's very hard to play like a team because it matters so much. Every play matters so much that you just feel like you have to give the ball to your best player and get everybody out of the way. And the Cavs were doing the same thing. It was really frustrating me. I was yelling at the TV, run a set, but I also understand why they weren't, you know? And I think that's a big reason why the Cavs won. When you got down to those one-on-one matchups, the Cavs just, Kyrie played better on offense than Curry played on defense. And when the few one-on-one matchups that happened, and they were able to get to switch Azealia on to LeBron a couple times, just by nature of how they ran a pick and roll. And then the one time when the Warriors got a favorable matchup doing the same thing, when they had Kevin Love on Steph Curry, Kevin Love played the best defense of his life for 5 seconds, you know, but it was and he's a terrible defensive player, but in the 5 seconds that it mattered, he played really, really good defense. And I thought that was really cool. And just in general, like, the game seven as a whole, it encapsulated like everything I love about sports. Like, just because everything, you know, obviously everything builds to this one game seven. And in my time as a basketball fan, there have been four game sevens of the finals. I didn't watch the Spurs Detroit one just because that finals was so boring. And then there was the Lakers Celtics, which was a fun game, and Heat Spurs 3 years ago, which was a fun game. But this was the one that was still like a one possession game with 25 seconds left. And I always get as a big basketball fan that likes to watch the whole game, people are always like, why are you watching the whole game? You only need to watch the last 2 minutes anyway, which is obviously idiotic for a million reasons. But because I like watching basketball, that's why I like watching 48 instead of 2 minutes of basketball. But like those things, those little things that you notice in the first couple minutes that then sort of pay off at the end, it's like a movie. It's like setting the setup in the intro for something that hits you even harder at the conclusion, right? At the very beginning of the game, there was a point where Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love double-teamed Festus Ezeli in the post and left Draymond Green wide open for three. And I was yelling at the TV. This is in like the first 3 minutes. I was yelling at the TV, why are you double-teaming Festus Ezeli, the only person you know is not going to score on you? And they left Draymond Green open for three, and that's when he hit his first three of the game. And like knowing that happened and then seeing Kevin Love play that defense on Steph Curry at the end, it's just, it makes the payoff so much better. And it was really cool, you know? And that's like a one little moment where, but you can apply that to everything about basketball. Like the fact that I was watching LeBron in 2003 makes it so much cooler to see what he did last night.
Yeah. And you the know? Fact that Cleveland wins nothing for decades makes it sweeter for them too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it was, I mean, those shots of downtown Cleveland were really cool. You know, like, I mean, that type of stuff is always cool to me, but, the celebration was really impressive. Like people across from the screens were filling up a parking, like the parking garage across from those screens was filled up with people.
Yeah.
Have you seen the pictures of people on top of a fire truck?
No.
Oh, people just like took over a fire truck, like zombies in the World War Z trailer or something. Like it was amazing.
Wow.
Can't have been safe, but it was very cool.
Yeah. What did you think of his, did you see LeBron's Ultimate Warrior shirt getting off the plane in Cleveland?
I did. I loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Anything that brings silly wrestling references into the culture is cool with me. I mean, I'm sure you saw the Kevin Love Stone Cold Steve Austin shirt as well.
Yeah.
That he was wearing last night. Yeah. That was wonderful.
You didn't think the Ultimate Warrior is a little too direct of a dig?
Whatever. LeBron gets at least 24 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So yeah, you want to just let me talk about LeBloc for another 48 minutes?
You talk about any of you want.
No, I'm kidding. So yeah, anything you wanted to add about sports?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I obviously had a really good time watching game 7.
Okay. So yeah, from your perspective, did you enjoyed the game?
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Okay. Because I thought it was a great game. And I think because of the stakes, since it was the best game 7 of the finals I've ever seen, and it was a legitimate, like if that had been a regular season game, I would have found it very entertaining. I think it has to be the best game of basketball I've ever seen, you know?
Yeah. I mean, right now the general consensus seems to be at least for the last 15 years, it's the best, playoff game.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I rewatched game 6 of the 2013 playoffs, which is the Ray Allen 3-pointer game. I rewatched that a couple weeks ago, and that game's awesome. Like even knowing everything that happens, watching it 3 years later is still great. And both teams played great right till the end. But I think this one just gets the edge just because, the championship wasn't decided by that game. If that game had been a game 7, unquestionably the best basketball game of all time to me, you know? But it wasn't, and this one was, and I think that's why it sort of takes the cake to me.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that for everything on the court, it makes it a really good game. But for everything else leading up to it, I mean, the narrative of the regular season record and the narrative of everything about LeBron's life up until this moment, I think that's what kind of elevates it. I mean, sports can always be extremely entertaining, but I think it takes storylines like that to really make them transcendent. And I think that they timed out very well for this year.
Yeah, for sure. And just going with that game 6 comparison, like I remember how I reacted to that Ray Allen 3, and I reacted very similar to that LeBron block last night. Like it was just something I didn't imagine could possibly happening in front of you and happening for real. And I mean, that's why I say this all the time. That's why I think a lot of geniuses really like sports, because no matter I mean, even if you have to watch a million basketball games to get the one that I got last night, the one that I got last night totally makes everything worth it. You know, it's just so cool and so impossible to predict perfectly. And it was just amazing. It was the best.
Yeah, and a game seven, it can't really be replicated, you know?
Exactly, exactly. And the fact that a lot of people played well, you know, it would have been better to see the Cavs win in a game that Steph and Clay also played well, but they couldn't have won if Steph and Clay played well, you know?
Yeah, that seems to be clear. And yeah, I just talking about some of the other series, I mean, I remember you telling me that the Warriors shouldn't even have beat the Thunder.
No, they shouldn't have. The Thunder made some grave errors. So the way that people started defending the Warriors, this is a comes from Popovich, the Spurs, the way that they defended the Warriors in I think it was a January game, the first one where the Warriors came to San Antonio to play the Spurs. And I think they won 88, the Spurs won 88 to 86. And what Popovich did was, or what the Spurs did was they switched everything, right? And the reason why say Draymond Green and Steph Curry start a pick and roll, Draymond Green's defender is going to switch on to Steph Curry as he pulls away from the pick and vice versa. And what that switching does is that it takes away a fraction of a second that Steph Curry could use to get that shot off, right? Whereas if they don't switch, then these two teammates have to fight over each other and that pick to get back to their man. And as we know from watching the Warriors, like a tenth of a second means a lot. It could be that it's all that Steph Curry needs to take a shot, right? So that was the way that teams started to defend the Warriors from that point. But not a lot of players or not a lot of teams had the right players to defend that, whereas the Thunder did, because they could send out a lineup of five people that were long enough and quick enough to switch on everything and then not get burned one-on-one with Steph Curry. And say, you know, if Tim Duncan was guarding Steph Curry after one of those switches, then you'd be in trouble. Steph Curry just runs by him. But with the Thunder, they could switch and then their player was up to the task. Even if Steven Adams got switched onto Steph Curry, he could guard him passively a lot of the time. And that's what the Cavs did too. And the matchups were worse for the Cavs, but they still pulled it off. But the thing that the Thunder did, in game six is they stopped running plays way too early. They switched to the prevent offense with 5 minutes left in the game and basically gave that game away. Another part of that was that Klay Thompson had an amazing game. But in game seven, they benched Steven Adams, who had been like their biggest weapon, because he was, one, getting rebounds, offensive rebounds for them, and two, was able to do all these switches. And I think they just made a terrible coaching mistake in that game. And for a long time, it really felt like in that series, it felt like the Thunder were going to be like the 2011 Mavs, where Kevin Durant and an assorted bunch of other pieces, and Russell Westbrook, of course, just sort of played amazing for the right 3 weeks of the year and won the title. And that didn't end up being the case, you know? And I thought that was so interesting.
Do you think Durant's going to kind of get lost in the shuffle in this era of basketball?
I definitely did until that series. And I don't put any of their loss on him. He also had an amazing game seven, and watching the beginning of that game seven, the way that he was playing, he didn't take a lot of shots early, but he was making perfect passes and the perfect read all the time, playing great defense. It really made me think that he will not. He has to win a title to not get lost, but I think he will now. You know, like, okay. I have more faith that he will now than ever before.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, without a championship, I think that kind of guarantees you get lost.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And there are, I think you can point to like Dominique Wilkins is probably a good example of somebody nobody thinks about because he never won a championship, but he was still very good, you know? And Kevin Durant's a better player than Dominique Wilkins, but history might not remember it that way if he doesn't win a ring.
Right.
You know, the ring at least makes sure that, that you are remembered a certain way as champion.
Anything else?
Sports are awesome. I love sports, and I'm all right. But I'm all right with the fact that I now have like 2 months before I have to watch sports again because yeah. I'm on my summer break now. from being yeah, a sports obsessive.
Stanley Cup's over, NBA's over.
Yeah.
The movies.
I'm sorry?
Watch the movies.
Yeah. Got a Bourne movie coming out to think about. Hopefully it's as good as Game 7.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening to McGuffin Man. Be sure to check back next week.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.